And I'll deal with it in my Hakarat HaTov lectures. Now, let's begin. We have a lot to do. Today is Sunday, October 29th, 2017. A beautiful Sunday morning, although we started saying V'tein Kalamata L'vracha. Those of you who were awakened in the middle Friday morning, the thunder, the lightning, but very little rain. But I said, take a look, we just started the Tank Palomata, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is answering us. I want to say hello to my dear students in front of me, and I want to say hello to all those listening, and I want to pick up with a few comments, and then come right into last week's lecture and refine it. I don't remember what shiur I said this in, but I said something about, oh, Yitz asked me about learning during Chazaras HaShatz, and I told the story that that Talmidim said to Reb Moshe that, how do you learn Mishnayot? Can you learn? And Reb said, no, what I did, I'm not going to, and he later wrote a tshuva that you have to hear Chazaras HaShatz, the Rav was very makpid. So a Talmud of Reb Moshe, Martin Zwick, Mendit Zwick, must be rabbi, wrote to me, I was a Talmud and MTJ for 20 years and never saw the Rosh Yeshiva learning during Chazaras HaShatz. He learned Mishnayot, Ben Gavra LeGavra during Kriyas HaTorah, also after davening as he was putting away his talis and tefillin. Okay? But Mendit Zwick writes, unless what you're talking about happened in the 50s. Look, Chas v'Chalila, I didn't mean to say a negative word about Reb Moshe, the Hefech. When we heard the story, it was to the greatness of Reb Moshe that a Talmud said something, and Reb Moshe says, you're right. But this happened in the 50s, and my memory, maybe it's someone else. Maybe it wasn't Reb Moshe, it was a different Rosh Yeshiva.
You know,
but
it is like you just said, memory. He was a Talmud
after.
Talking about, it's like the two people quote the Rav, neither are lying.
Right.
One is quoting the Rav in 1960.
Right, you'll see that in one second. Right, but I just want to make clear, Chas v'Chalila, I hope I didn't come across negative. We heard the story to the godlet of Reb Moshe. But it could be I'm wrong. Well, you know, I can tell you with Reb Aaron Cutler, I was an eyewitness. What I write about, I believe in Washington, I was an eyewitness. There, no one can tell me, it's not a shmua, that I couldn't believe it. A Talmud, when nobody, you all know where during Chazaras HaShatz, so you finish Kedusha, Ata Kadosh Shimcha Kadosh. Do you stand still, or do you turn around and sit down, or turn around and walk? Do you have to remain standing for Takadosh? That's a machlokes apaiskim. So Reb Aaron, the minute he finished Kedusha, turned around. He faced the oilam. He didn't sit. He stood during Chazaras HaShatz. But here, he's saying Kedusha, and then he would turn around and he would face the 100 students that are davening with him. So a kid goes over to him and shows him the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, I believe, paskins, that you should wait till the chazan finishes the bracha, till you break standing straight. And he goes over to Reb Aaron Cutler, he's showing him and he's rebuking him. And Reb Aaron looked at the kid and, you know, went like that and continued his practice. So, you know, the American kids are chatsufim. The Satmuruv, this I didn't see with my own eyes, but I quote a source for it in the Silver Book. The Satmuruv, Talmidim came into his house and broke the mirrors. They didn't think it was right that the Rebbetzin should have a mirror to look in and put on makeup. You understand? These are Chatsufim, Rivayni Shalaylim, the Satmarov. Who are you?
He's okay. Not arrested.
Excuse me?
I have him arrested.
You'd have him listen. Okay, now I want to say something else that I'm overjoyed. And this is just what Yitzchak said. Gentlemen, my memory is correct. Mark Wiener, Rabbi Dr. my Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener got in touch with Rabbi Menachem Gopin. Mendy Gopin, Davin was the Gabbai, was the Baal Torah, everything in Maimonides. He saw the Rav. Ah, for many years, the Rav Zal never said Kedusha de Sidra aloud on Motzei Shabbos. Just what I remember from the 19th vineyard. You've been with me? That the Rav got hysterical at night. He gave a whole drasha. I'm going to talk about this in a different context when I speak about Kafui, when I speak about the bracha. On the next topic we're covering, I'll come into this in a Rambam. You'll see, I'll give you a beautiful gift from the Rav. So the Rav said, night, it's a time of fear and pachad, and you don't say Kedusha, and he quoted the Zohar. Rakefet doesn't Rothkopf, I was Rothkopf at the time. The Rav said, you don't say Kedusha, the Sidra, aloud. Of course, I never said it. Then, take a look. It must have been 66, 67. I was the Baal Tefillah on Motzei Shabbat. For some reason, we got to Vakat Atah Kodesh, and the Rav says to me, nu. I wanted to keep going, but he insisted on getting to yell at me, nu. I figured it out, and we said Kedusha the Sidra out loud, or as if it were Uvalitzion on a weekday. After davening, I asked the Rav why. And he told me that this week he had seen a Shita Tagra that you say it aloud even at night. I never asked the Rav where he saw it, but from that day on at Maimonides, we said it on Motzei Shabbat. So gentlemen, you see, my memory was correct, and Rav Heschel Shecht is correct. He says, later in life, the Rav changed his mind and said it aloud. Yitzchak, I have to tell you, I cannot bring myself to say Kedusha the Sidra aloud Saturday night. I can't. I just can't. I know the Rev changed his mind, but I was not there when he changed his mind. I still remember the 50s. All right, Binyamin, I'm dealing with a big halachic problem. Don't misunderstand me. Now, one other thing he got from Mendy Gopin. Not only did they lay in at night, Simchas Torah, but they called up five aliyot. Side note, the Rav insisted on being the gabbai and called up for those five special aliyot, those boys who expended the most amount of energy dancing during Hakafat. I don't know, Yitzchak, that doesn't sound like the Rav to me, but what can I tell you? Ear, eye, witness, ish mi pi ish. Okay. The rest we'll talk about with Birchat HaGadol. Okay, now I want to come back to the question of last week and go a little bit deeper and show you that this was a real machlokes. The questionnaire bothered the Rav Menashe Klein. He had to write another tshuva on it. Who this Yaakov Treiber is, I don't know. The tshuva's from... what year did we say here? Is there a year here? 1975. So already I was living in Israel already 6-7 years, 1975. I don't know who this person is. He's part of the Brooklyn crowd, but evidently he was a Talmud Chacham. And you see, let me reintroduce it, because I mentioned very quickly in passing, B'machteret, in B'machteret, you might say, Haganov, and Steve Gross said to me that you should have elaborated. So when I re-looked at the tshuva again, I saw, now we can understand it a lot better. And let me begin. Look at the pasuk in Chumash. Shmot chafbet pasuk aleph. Im b'machteret yimatzei hagana v'huka v'meit, ein lo damim. Im zacha ha-shemesh alav, damim lo. Right, this is a very strange pasuk. If he's coming in secretly, plowing through, an underground tunnel, b'machteret, and you kill him, you're justified in killing him. Ein lo damim, the ganav has no blood, has no value, his life is forfeit. And then in Zarchar Hashemesh alav, but if the sun was shining, damin lo. Very esoteric and very strange. Look into the Gemara in Sanhedrin, dafayim bet amid aleph, dafayim bet amid bet. And I take for granted, you know, the Gemara. But it's a very important Gemara, and you should look it up. Rashi quotes the Gemara, and you see that the Pasuk is talking in figurative language, not literally. And the way the Gemara interprets it, in B'machteret Yavol HaGanav, if the Ganav is coming and you know he's out to kill, he's coming, a thief, plowing through in the dark of night, then you have a right to defend yourself. This is what America is all about, the right to carry a weapon. I told you in Las Vegas, my brother told me, more than half the men in the shul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, were davening with loaded guns. The police told them, have a few people with loaded guns sitting in different areas. We have information that the terrorists are planning who knows what with the Muslims. My brother told me there was a police car parked in front of the shul with a policeman in it. And in the shul there was a guy sitting there, a goy gamur, with a yarmulke, holding a prayer book, a Secret Service guy with a loaded gun. Who knows, maybe even a machine gun. Anything is possible. And there, you know, they're coming to kill. The same thing, God have mercy. And the shul in Hanov, where the Rav's grandson was killed, where my grandson of Son I grew up with was killed. I knew two, three people out of the five that were killed, lo aleinu. So there, you know, he's coming to kill. You have to blow him away. You have to kill him. But if the sun is shining, if it's clear to you that he is not coming to kill, then you have no right to kill him. Takes your money, but he won't kill you. So you see, the pasuk is open to interpretation. What's very fascinating, and this it hurts me to talk about, but life has taught me this is true. The Gemara on Ayin Bet Amid Bet, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Michael, about Im B'machteret Yimotzei HaGanav, do you have a right to kill a crook coming to hold you up? So the Gemara says, what does it mean he's coming to kill you? What does it mean he's not coming to kill you? And the Gemara gives a shocking example. A father coming to rob a son will not kill the son. Ki rachamei ha'ava ha'ben. Look into Rashi, I'm paraphrasing it. A son coming to rob a father may very well kill him. If it's a father who's robbing you, you can't kill him. If it's a son who's robbing you, you can kill him. A frightening thought, but so absolutely true. Give you an example, either way. Right now, there's big news broke on all the websites. I got so many copies of it. People sent me, and I just called my brother and told him what I'll tell you in a minute, and my brother couldn't believe it. The Satmar Rav's great-grandson just became an officer.
He's got two, not one.
He just became an officer. I said an officer. It includes anyone above the lower level.
In other words, he's
a first lieutenant.
Exactly.
He's a first lieutenant. I know a little bit about the ranks in the army. He's a first lieutenant. So, would you believe it or not? I know all about him. How do I know about him? My grandson, Shevach Samuel, serves under him in the army. He's a maki, he's a mafaked kita under the maizlish. He tells me he's the only person he's met in the army who speaks Hebrew with a Yiddish accent. Everyone else has an American accent, a French accent, a Russian accent, a British accent, a South African accent, and his first language was Yiddish. So you see, my
what's
an American accent? How come when I open my mouth in Hebrew and I speak Hebrew as well as I speak English, as quickly as I speak English? I'm just as home in Hebrew. I can speak to 1,000 people in an audience in Hebrew. Ain't the shumbaya, ani lo chashesh, okay? The minute they hear me open my mouth in Hebrew, they speak their broken English to me.
It's not right. I try to speak Hebrew. I think I can speak it.
There's a difference between the accents. The Russians have their accent. The French have theirs, we have ours.
We have ours. It's not a put down, but I have a principle. No, no, I have a principle that if you're a native Hebrew speaker, I speak Hebrew to you. I will not
dislike when Israelis who can't speak English well want to speak to me in English.
Right. They want to, well, they want to practice their English on you. You have to have rachmanis. It's be nice to people. But I'm totally at home in Hebrew. But the minute I open my mouth, they break into English. Zereden Yiddish kann ich retten. Zu lehnen ist ein bisschen schwer.
Ge gringe.
A litvische Yiddish, wie ich aber gehört von meinen Rebbeim. I'm stuck on what I heard, what can I tell you? If I hear a Pelische Yiddish, I can understand it. But a Galatiani Yiddish, Ungarisch is hard, and I don't get into trouble, but I always felt the Hungarians were influenced by the Galicians, you understand?
The best Yiddish is the Litvish.
That's in your opinion, but
I'm a Galician.
We have mazel that the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, spoke a Litvish Yiddish, so it's very easy to understand him. Very easy. But anyway, okay, listen to me carefully now. So my grandson told me that it's the way they describe it. His family disowned him. His father is very closely in touch with him, Rav Mezlish. He's the son. Anyone here from Chicago? It's the Rav not from Chicago. From Chicago. Rav Mezlish, the Sheirat HaPleita congregation in Chicago. His grandfather wrote Sfarim on the Holocaust that I quoted in my lectures. Were you here yet when I did 5 years in the Holocaust? So remember I quoted Mekadshei Hashem? That's the Gzeda of this Chayal. Could very well be his father is very proud of him. He knows what his father went through. So he's very close. My grandson told me that one time he had to go to the hospital, a minor ailment, but they put Mezlish into the hospital. His father was in touch every half hour. What's happening? Right on top of it. But what is to show you that a father has rachmanis on a child? Chazal was so insightful. He can't break that relationship. A mother, a father, a child who was born. A Brit Mila, right now. Michael, there's a Brit Mila in the building. I'm missing. I trust that's where my students are. But anyway, it's someone who's learned here for about 3 years already, at least. So a father, you raised, you can't get a kid. How many times do we see children killing parents? And I'll tell you a vort, this is my vort, that the Kibbutz Aviyim, I say, why do you need a mitzvah? Such an important commandment. Kibbutz Aviyim, the fifth commandment, am I right or wrong? The whole world stands on the Ten Commandments. It's, look at the Gemara in Kedushin, the Gemara says, Maze kibbutz aviyim, motziu, machnisu, malbishu, machilu, mashkehu. I want to change the Gemara. What does a parent do for a child when he's an infant? All my grandchildren, Knein Hara, many of them are going through it now. If you can't sleep at night, you have to mashkehu, machilu, machnisu, motziu, malbishu. What do we do for these little kids? Why do you need a mitzvah? It's paying back a debt. Every human being, a decent human being, wants to pay a debt, right or wrong?
Wrong.
But you see what happens? Freud. Children and parents, there's the love-hatred relationship. It's amazing. Kids will blame the parents. You did this wrong. You did that wrong. Only when a kid turns 30, he says to his father, gee, he says to his father, the last 2 years you grew up so, you became so smart. You know, the kid first realizes. And by the way, we do make mistakes. This is Rav Shimshon Finkish's famous commentary, why a Bukhar gets two times, Pishnayim, because you make all your mistakes on the firstborn. So deep vod from Rav Hirsch. But you see, the Gemara is right. It's hard to comprehend. And you see in Israel, you see at times, you see in America, civilized countries, children kill parents. Now, this pasuk, this Gemara, but what does it show us? That when someone comes to rob you, it's a very selective, subjective understanding that you have to have. You have to make a decision. Does he want to kill me? Does he just want money? It's not black and white. This is not a topic, Chilul Shabbos. Black and white. Kashrut. Black and white. Here with robbery, you blow away the thief. Did you have a right to kill him? B'machteret, yes. If the sun is shining, no. It's not literally, it's figuratively. Very fascinating. And of course, now it reflects when someone comes to rob you, what's his goal? The holdup. Will he kill you? If he has to? Or does he just want the money? And here you get involved, you'll see, Rabbi Menashe Klein quotes it, but he's absolutely right. You get involved with a different problem. What is the most precious part of our existence? And you all know this, it's axiomatic. Zukrei beirakhu. Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha. To a person like myself, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol levavcha, absolutely. B'chol meyodecha, what, I don't give a hoot about money. That's put on the same level with your soul, with your heart. Ribbono shel Olam, money comes, goes. I've gone through life, nar hayiti v'gam zakanti. And I've been a there were periods in my life where it was mamish zaru mevakesh lechem. I've other periods in life. Today, Baruch Hashem, I can get a cup of coffee and a piece of cake and kanayin hara. But I know what it's like. I didn't have money for the fourth Shabbat of the month. Not that I was lazy. I worked two full jobs, but it was a black. The whole economy here, you can't imagine what it was like in 69, 70s. Even, you can't imagine. It's hard for you to conceive of it if you didn't live here. And I was on the books. I was getting one check from the Israeli government and one check from the Jewish agency. It all went away in taxes. So, but money, all right, money. Money's important. I don't put money down, but to put it on the same level with your soul, with your heart. And yet, what do Chazal say? There's some people that money is more important to them than even their own lives. They'll fight even if they get killed, even if they're risking their lives, but they don't want to lose a penny to you. You follow? There's so much subjectivity here. The human being, the person, the place, the robber, the crook, who is he? And then you come into the very question of what is Birchat HaGomel? Is Birchat HaGomel? When do you say Birchat HaGomel? This is an unbelievable question. Is it when you feel danger? Money, some people, they got to give up $100. Wow, I'm lucky he didn't take my life. I was ready to punch him, ready to trigger him, to God, you know, a guy coming to rob. Or other people, it's only $100, the hell with it. Take it, run, enjoy, get drunk, buy drugs, enjoy yourself, take off, get going. Sure. And this all reflects. And then there's the basic question of Birchat HaGomel. What does Birchat HaGomel mean? Slight danger, real danger. And this was what we spoke about last week. The Gemara talks about, for I have to thank God, Yor Dayam, Holchei Midbarat, Mishayach Olev Benitrapeh, Mishayach Havush Beveit Asurim. What does it mean? These are the four, no one else? Or these are the four as symbols of difficult times. And Enoch Inami, you talk about flying, statistically speaking, It's much more dangerous to cross the street than it is to get on a plane. Last night in my building, we have a Marav building, Motzoi Shabbos Motzoi. The only time we don't have a Marav minyan is Motzoi Yom Kippur. But otherwise, maybe for 20, 25 years already, Rav Berlin, 18, we're not there. We started it in our parking lot. Now, a block and a half away, further down in Rav Berlin, there's also a minyan. And with all these minyanim, the shuls are still packed. Well, we have a minyan. It's very convenient. I fall out of my house, go downstairs, and there's the minyan. Fine, very convenient. So last night, I noticed my neighbor and her daughter are standing in back, and I could understand what they're doing at the minyan. I mean, I understand them. There's some women who daven Marav. I don't know if my neighbor davens Marav. Certainly the mother doesn't. She's from a different generation. She was married to Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld's grandson. He's gone, my wonderful neighbor, Chaim Zichrono Levracha. And this is, she was there with Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld's great-granddaughter. And then right when we finish Aleinu, my next-door neighbor, Professor Carmi Horowitz, gives a clap, and I'm already looking for the moon. And I can't understand. I think he said, Birchat HaGomel? I said, it's Kiddush HaChodesh. What Birchat? And my neighbor makes a Birchat HaGomel. So I went over, and we were going up in the elevator, and I said, why did you make a Birchat HaGomel? And she told me she was driving on Rehov Rachel Imenu, and someone came out of a side street like 50 kilometers an hour. Just by a miracle, she served to the, am I pronouncing it right? They served to the side and swerved to the side, and he didn't, and it didn't hit her. And she said, I was mamish basakana. So you see, going on into a car, the rough flying from Boston to New York, New York, Boston, if he would have to make a bracha, it would be twice a week. He'd be making a birchat hagomel. All right, it's an interesting question, and this is the machlokes. And the person questioning Reb Menashe Klein is he's insistent that you don't have to make a birchat hagomel. He interprets a holdup in New York. No one wants to get in trouble with the law. No one's interested in getting in trouble. All they want is a little money. And they're holding you up. They're pointing a gun, but they have no intention of shooting it. And if you just held up, you walk away and say, thank God he took the $100 from Insein Gesund. And what I told you, Rabbi Rachman, I remember it like yesterday. And people today, you know, everyone jokes, $20, I say, in the 1950s, $20 was like $100 today. And Rabbi Rachman, do you know America, Binyamin? So the five towns, no from Jew lived there. This was Long Island. But next to the five towns, still in, Far Rockaway, it's part of Queens?
Yes.
It's part of Queens. So that's adjacent to Lawrence. So in the 50s, when I was growing up, from Jews started moving to Far Rockaway. That was like the fanciest area. And there were two tremendous shuls there, the White Shul and Shari Tfilah. Very famous Rabbanim, Rabbi Palkowitz, who should live and be well. He must be hitting 100 years today. He, Rabbi Ralph Palkowitz, he was a Torah Vadas graduate. That was the White Shul. Rabbi Emanuel Rachman was a YU graduate when there was no YU yet. It was Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. And he was actually Columbia University and got smicha from Reitz. His father was a rabbi in Albany. Probably got smicha in the late 20s, I would imagine, early 30s. Early 30s it has to be, because he and my father, I was the same age as his eldest son. We both, his eldest son and yours truly, we were chavruta. And we both came from families of three boys. So Rabbi Rachman, suddenly the neighborhood started changing. A new element was moving in, and there were holdups. And Jews were held up on Shabbos. And there was bad stories where they didn't give money. They were frustrated. They beat them. So Rabbi Rachman paskin that you should put a $20 bill inside your hat. Everyone in America wears a hat, a fancy hat. Inside there's like a brim. You put the $20 bill in. Therefore, you're not carrying on Shabbat. It's above 10 amot. It's makom haptur, right? And give the crook $20 and he won't bother you. So see, that takes the attitude. If they only want money, maybe you don't have to make a birchat hagomel. But Reb Menashe Klein felt very strongly that if they come to rob you in America, Meisim that we know about, if you don't give them money, they will blow you away. And even if you give them money, they don't want you to testify. You saw their face. You've seen movies. This is a constant theme, that if you saw their face, if you can identify them, they will blow you away. They don't want the police to know who they are. And he paskins la halacha, you absolutely have to make a bir hakadomel. Now, two interesting letters, very fascinating. Anyone know Yonason, Rabbi Yonason Hertz? He's been in class whenever he's in Israel. His wife is a student of mine from Mikvala. He's rabbi of Utopia Jewish Center in Hillcrest. You met him right here in this classroom.
Yeah,
very fine individual. So listen to this. He heard this year last Sunday. Dear Rebbe, as you often say, B'didi Haviyuvda, that's an expression from the Gemara. It happened to me. I just finished listening to the shiur concerning the tshuva about the holdup, and I feel I need to share with you a story. It happened on May 1st, 1974. I can't get over how he... My father, Zal, and I went to daven Minchas Ma'ariv at our local shul. We davened at Or HaChaim on the Upper East Side. Now, Or HaChaim, you recognize it's a shul that had very well-known rabbanim. The chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Hertz, was first the rabbi of Or HaChaim. No relationship to this Hertz, the chief rabbi of England, Rabbi the Hertz Siddur, the Hertz Chumash. You've been raised on it, you know what I'm talking about, Ben Yamino? It's passé today. What? I can't hear?
It's Olivai.
Okay, good. He was rabbi there, Rabbi Moses Hymanson. You know who he was? He taught at the seminary, a big Talmud Chacham, when the seminary was... Right. Rabbi Dr. Samson Rafael Weiss, Rabbi Simon Langer, Langer, I think they pronounced it. He was French. Rabbi Belkin used to call him my rabbi. Then Rabbi Kenneth Hain, before he went to Lawrence. Rabbi Dr. Michael Schmidman, who we know from Yeshiva, and the current Rabbi Ben Skidel. At the time, the rabbi was Rabbi Langer. I was asked to be the Shliach Tzibur. In the middle of Chazaret Hashatz, our caretaker, an African-American woman who cleaned the shul and opened the doors for the minyanim, came into the Beit Knesset, and she was being held at gunpoint. Someone, also Afro-American, had come into the shul building and took her and threatened her life if we didn't hand over our money. He was holding in his hand the small basket that was placed in front of the shul that had kippot for those who didn't come with one. You follow in the shul. There was a little basket with kippot. He took that basket, and evidently he wanted money in it, holding a gun. Everybody was absolutely stunned. He immediately looked around and saw what to him looked strange. Someone wearing a talit, me. He motioned me to come to him. Rabbi Langer and my father both simultaneously screamed at me not to move. At that point, everyone went into their wallets and put cash in the basket. When he saw he had about $100, he pushed the woman away and ran out of the shul. We immediately called the police, who came within minutes. They surmised that the crook ran the two blocks and disappeared into the subway. We all composed ourselves and finished Mincha and Maariv. Rabbi Langer said on that Shabbos, we should all bench Goymel as we experienced a very potential, possible sakana. Okay? So according to Rav Menashe Klein, they certainly had to bench Goymel. According to the person bothering Reb Menashe Klein again and again, it's a question, did he really mean to shoot anyone? Did he really mean to harm her? He just had the box there, saw $100 and ran out, I guess enough to get drugs and liquor and to continue his lifestyle. No, during the week, Minchamara. Okay. Then one other, this is from Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, you won't believe this. Gentlemen, Superman is the result of a fatal robbery of a Jew. Okay? And the night of June 2nd, 1932, the world's first superhero was born. It was Thursday night at about 10 p.m. at about 8:10 p.m. In other words, 10 minutes after 8. And Mitchell Siegel, a Jewish immigrant from Lithuania, was in his second-hand clothing store on the Lower East Side. According to a police report, three men entered, one asked to see a suit of clothes and walked out without paying for it. In the commotion of the robbery, Siegel, 60 years of age, fell to the ground and died. The police report mentions a gunshot being heard, but the coroner, the police, and Siegel's wife said Siegel died of a heart attack. No one was ever arrested. Gentlemen, Jerry Siegel, the son of Mitchell, is one of the co-authors, founders, Clark Kent, Superman, that dominates cartoons until today. And this story, I wonder how Mark Wiener came up with it, claims that Superman is the result of a robbery, the heart attack or the gunshot, we can't be sure. Sakonet nefashot, absolutely, adds a new twist to a robbery. It's shocking, it's terrible, and it can be fatal in the sense it shakes up your inner body. Now, not so germane to the tshuva, but I'll tell you what's very interesting. Two Jewish boys, Jerry Siegel and his friend, were the ones, someone named Shuster, Joe Shuster, who invented America's best-known comic book hero. Do you know that they never got money for it? They sold the rights for a few hundred dollars. How do you know? You read but where did you pick it up? I mean, in a million years, I wouldn't know this.
One second.
They sold all the rights, signed the contract. No one ever dreamt. It's like the person who invented that thing that every kid is walking around with today, that you twist on your finger. The lady invented it so Arabs should do that instead of hating Jews, and she didn't copyright it. And it's made hundreds of millions of dollars for the people. It comes out of China today. It's have various color ones. It's unbelievable. Amishagas. So,
same thing happened to the guy who did the
Hula. Right.
Sold it to Parker, the Monopoly game.
Anyway, to make a long story short, in recent years, the ones that have the rights to Superman sold it for $1 billion. $1 billion. So they went to court, and the court encouraged them to make a settlement. And they do have a settlement that every year, I can tell you the sum, let me see if I can, I don't want to waste time because this is unimportant, but every year they get $20,000 for life, both the Jewish boys, as long as they're alive, they get $20,000 apiece for life. All right, it's pennies, but better than nothing. All right, finally, I just want to mention that Rabbi Micha Berger wrote to me that the whole concept of Benchen Goimel he sees as a successor to the Korban Todah. So that's a very interesting thought, and it's a thought that can be developed. He bases it upon the pasuk we learned it out from in Tehillim, Kuf Zayin, deals with Yetziat Mitzrayim. And you see that there's a thanksgiving to God that is due, Hallel, a Korban Todah, that if you accomplish something, you go through a desert, you cross the sea, you cross the ocean, we have to be thankful to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that would strengthen my own position that after I finish a long trip and finally get home, I make a Birchat HaGoimo at that time. All right, let me go one step further and then I want to open up the next topic. Chelek Zayin Siman Lamed Aleph. There's another tshuva dealing with exactly the same topic, and he, Reb Menashe Klein, sticks to his position that you certainly have to make a Birchat HaGomel. And he says, nowadays to hold up people, you know yourself how many people have been killed in holdups in our neighborhood. And even though they're only asking for money, but part of the concept is that if they fear you will identify them, Shelo Yomru L'Mishtara, they will blow you away. And sometimes, Stam Rishit, they'll blow you away out of hatred. You're white, you're Anglo-Saxon, you're Jewish, you have money, you're wealthy, you have everything they don't have. And then he says, and individuals, you know, to them, they may not want to give them money because their money is more dear to them than their own body. And that's what I spoke about with after the Shemelo Kecha. And he also quotes the Gemara in Brachat. We get involved in a very interesting concept which relates to Halacha as well. People will take on dangerous jobs because they desperately need the money. We will risk our lives for money. You know, in the state of Israel, we have a very high percentage of workers who are building up in scaffolds who fall and get killed, tragedy after tragedy. Rarely does a week go by. So why does anyone take a job like this? Why do people climb up in trees to pick fruit? But to feed their children, exactly. So you see that money can be very important too. And Lahalacha, he's very insistent that if you survive a holdup, you absolutely have to make Birchat HaGoimel. And the truth of the matter is, I don't believe there's a posek in the world who would disagree with Rav Menashe Klein.
Okay.
Jack Benny, what did he say?
When a robber comes up to him, your money or your life.
Right.
Yeah. And he hesitates.
Yeah, yes.
Jack Benny look.
Right, right. So, yeah, but what are you trying to say? He hesitates.
No,
yeah.
he makes the point.
That he'd rather have his money. He'd rather give away his life. He doesn't want to give up his money. Okay, no, I hear. Okay. Let me just see that I have my notes in order. Okay. The Marx brothers were Hungarian Jews. They came from a frum background, I'm told. Houdini's father was a chazan, a rabbi.
No, he's Jewish.
Houdini's name was
Weiss. Weiss, correct.
Jack Benny's wife was Jewish. George Burns' wife was
Racist. Okay. Yes. All right, gentlemen, now we come to a very fascinating tshuva. And Yitzchak, I have to tell you, don't get heart failure. Reb Menashe Klein, very open-minded and very narrow-minded. And he can...
And he was a Magyar, too.
He was a what?
Magyar.
Magyar, he's Hungarian.
Oh, Hungarian. But I'm just cautioning Magyar. You, because he can deal with YU, and yet he can run away from YU, as you will see. Now...
Did you ever meet Reb Menashe?
No, I never met him in person, but I went online, and I met him through a video of him, which was fabulous. Now...
He had the kotel on his shul.
That I know. I've been to his shul many times, the kotel and Kever Rachel in Borough Park. And I was at the shul he built here as well, with the help of Eli Wiesel, his chavruta, the Nobel Prize money, the Shul in Ramat, that's in memory of Eli Wiesel's
so
parents.
Even though he was a Satmar, he was a Zionist.
He was not entirely a Satmar, he was a Lubavitcher. He was an individualistic person. He was our type of person. He didn't let anyone boss him around or frighten him. He painted his own picture of life, you follow, within the Misgeret HaHilchatit. Okay, but I want to begin at the beginning, and I want to open your eyes to a few things. Okay, we're now beginning Chelik Tetvav, Siman Ayin David. And he's going to deal here with the Gemara in Brachot, Daf Nun Chet Omer Aleph. All right? Tana Rabbanan. Haroeh Chachma Yisrael Omer Baruch Shechalak Mechachmato Lireyav. Chachma Yovdei Kachavim Omer Baruch Shenatan Mechachmato Lebriotav. Very interesting sounding Gemara. Chachma Yisrael. You see Rav Moshe Feinstein. You see Rav Soloveitchik. You see Rav Aaron Kotler. You want to make a bracha. So the lesson of the Gemara, Shechalak Mechachmato Lireyav. That God, look at the language here, Chalak. God shares his wisdom with those who fear him. What kind of wisdom? Torah wisdom. What we're studying now. You see, Chachmei Ovdei Kachavim, for the sake of argument, Florence Nightingale, I trust she wasn't Jewish. Pasteur, I don't know, you come up with Jews.
Her name was Soloveitchik, by the way.
Whose name?
Florence Nightingale.
So she was Jewish or wasn't Jewish?
I don't know, but her name was Soloveitchik.
Soloveitchik, wow.
That makes sense. That's
the word. One second. Let's take a name that we don't have a problem with. Give me a name of a brilliant, brilliant non-Jew. Someone who won.
Alexander Fleming,
all right.
Joseph List.
Okay. Chachmei Ovdei Kachavim Omer. Baruch Shenatan Mechachmato Lebriotav. Not that God is sharing, that God gave wisdom to his creatures.
Aristotle, Plato,
okay, fine. That's the Gemara as we read it. You're going to find variant readings. That's not really the Gemara. The censor played with it. Where do you look when you feel there's a problem with variant readings? Where do you look? Dictate Sofrim. How many of you are familiar with Dictate Sofrim? We learned about this in graduate school. Rebbe Fol Natan Netta Rabinovich. Talmud Musmach of Reb Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. This man who called HaTorah Kula, and he was lived the 19th into the 20th century. 1800s into the early 1900s, if I'm not mistaken. He made it into the 1900s, but that can be checked. This was a period where Chochmat Yisrael was rampant. Chochmat Yisrael, one of the basic factors, issues, where it takes on a different configuration, a different hue than traditional learning, is critical textual structure, which means when you open up a Gemara, today in this building, 150 kids are learning in Torah Tshraka. They're going to open a Gemara. they're going to take for granted what the Gemara is saying. That is the correct text. Kids in the Kollel are going to open up a Gemara, going to open up a Yoredeya. No one is going to question the text. In modern times, you have a text that is thousands of years old, that has gone through so many hands, so many copyists before printing was invented. How do we know you have the right text? And establishing a critical text, textual apparatus, became, I would say, one of the prime, most foremost concerns of Chochmat Yisrael scientific Jewish scholarship. Reb, the Dikdikei Sofrim, Reb Natan Netta Rabinovich, was a great Talmud Chacham who was sensitive to the fact that we have to try to see what is really the text. And if you look at Dikdikei Sofrim, and I advise you to look at it, we have it in our library. He didn't complete all of Shas, but he did by far most of Shas. He has hundreds of thousands of small variations in the text. If you look at Masechet Brachot, and in Dikdikei Sofrim, you can find it very easily. It's page 163, Kuf Samach Gimel. So, look what he has here. Shenatan mechachmato lebriotav, that the original text, shechilek mechachmato lebasa vadam. And you look into the footnotes that in all the original printings and all the original poskim, the whole text is different. Chachmei umat olam shechilek, Chachmei Yisrael shenatan. And the Haggad, the Rav Dikdikei Sofrim, says, Nishtaneh mechas tzensur. The tzensur made them change it. Now, what's the difference? What does it mean, Shechilek, Shenatan? What is the difference? I'll tell you what the difference is. The greatest gift is Shenatan. Shenatan means God gave it to us. It's ours. It's like we're intermingling with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Torah is God, and because we're good Jews, because we strive, because we learn, because we care, because we observe, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a gift. And we're kinder it. It's ours. Chilek, yes, wisdom is God. God created the world. All that we have, all chemistry, biology, it's all part of the divine system. But chilek takes less of a meaning. It's not that it's yours. God was good enough to share it with you, but he's the boss. He can take it back. Shenatan lanu et torato is a bigger compliment. Interestingly, the censors picked up that this is a put-down to non-Jews, and what did they do? They switched it. Shenatan is for the Goyim, and Shechilek is for the Jews. Very interesting. It can be a small matter. It's not a major difference, but you can see what censorship is about. How did the Goyim know this? How did they know? How did they recognize? How did they have the finesse to understand that this is a bit of a put-down?
A lot of these censors were Talmud Talmidei Chachamim.
Oh boy.
They were Jews.
You hit the nail on the head.
They became apostates.
That we always had senses who became apostates, lower
right.
Leinu,
right.
And they created endless problems for us. And this
now
is how.
Beseda.
Okay. Now.
One second. What we had in YU, Rabbi Weiss. That's what he did.
Who are you talking? Which rabbi? Oh, you're talking about Professor Avraham Weiss. Professor Avraham Weiss. No, this is with Gemara. He went. They try to recreate the proper text, the original text.
Many
Sfarim. He used to, but he always said, if there are 10 people in the world who understand what I'm writing, it's accomplishing. Binyamin, what we're talking about is. Chachmat Yisrael, again, I can't go into it in great detail, no, I did give lectures on this many years ago in the Monday class. Chachmat Yisrael begins with the Enlightenment. Originally, many of the people who got involved with Chachmat Yisrael were no longer totally religious. As time marched on...
Or Jewish.
No, but I'm talking about the... Yes, Goyim could be involved with Chachmat Yisrael. It's not limited to Jews. It's like we learn biology. They could learn there were professors, Professor Travis at Harvard, Professor Albright at Johns Hopkins at the University in Baltimore.
Right, Travis Herbert.
That they were very, very, very learned. But as time marched on, most of the people involved with Chochmat Yisrael were Shomrei Shabbos, with Shomrei Torah and Mitzvah, but they had a different approach. The Rav, when he visited Israel for the one and only time in 1935, so one of the most interesting comments he made was that in Yerushalayim, the Chochmei Yisrael carried umbrellas on Shabbos, that they used to leave it open before Shabbos, and he said this was like a sign that they were from the Chachmei Yisrael, not from the Talmud Torah attitude, the classic attitude.
Well, the truth is,
according to Malacha, you can do that. Yesh makom lateh, I'm not saying no. But the majority, but that became like a sign, you follow? But they were concerned with Halacha. Okay, but Chachmat Yisrael, a great deal of the thrust was to establish the proper text. We're going to come back to this. You're going to see it affects, if you can have it, one word, how it affects endless thinking and how many books have been written on one word. So what Yitzchak is referring to at Yeshiva University, what was then Yeshiva College in 1935, I believe it was. You can check Revel, my first book. They organized the graduate school division. The graduate school division had a scientific approach. It was to rival the seminary so that anyone, JTS in New York, so that if you wanted to study a scientific approach after you got smicha and you were well versed in Shas and Paiskim, you don't have to go to the seminary. YU has it. Now that branch of YU later is named for the first president, my cousin. It's called the Bernard Revel Graduate School of Jewish Studies. You follow? And with World War II, people were desperate to get out of Europe. One of the most famous people that got out and finally reached America, and it's an unbelievable story of survival and how they did it. They wound up in Portugal. Was Professor Avraham Weiss. Professor Weiss was Polish. He was a man who knew Kol HaTorah Kula, the entire Shas by heart. We yet knew him. I knew him better than Yitzchak because he lived in the Bronx and his children, we were friendly, three children. My wife was friendly with one. My brother Levi was friendly with another. Four children, I remember three.
No, Ora was your wife's friend.
Yeah, Ora was my wife's friend. And Benji was my brother's friend. And the Moshe Zichrono Levracha was older.
Right.
He was older than I am. In the Bronx, the Kingsbridge section of the Bronx. So they all came in Aliyah. The whole family is here. So Professor Weiss was picked up by Bernard Rebel Graduate School. You follow? He arguably may have been the most famous professor. He was world famous. His brother was Professor Albeck, Hanach Albeck of Bar Ilan University also. There's a street named after him, correct. Albeck, correct. And these people were on a different level altogether. So Professor Weiss, he tried to establish proper text, but he did more than that. He tried to establish a rewriting of the Talmud that was chronologically correct. In other words, instead of mixing up the generations, he tried to show you discussions in all of Shas within one generation, the way it actually took place. I mean, you had to be a genius to do this. But then again, a genius, how many people understand? So he used to say, if there are 10 people who understand what I've published here, I'm doing well.
I have this analogy called father and son. Well, that would have...
It's different than Zeitlin.
Then he was about
Zeitlin denied some of the things in Chazal. Zeitlin was different. Rabbi Professor Weiss never denied anything. All he did was try to show it in a certain order. And people have picked up on that theme here. It always will pop up again. Layers to the Talmud. You follow? And that's the concept. But this was Chochmat Yisrael. And this whole question. But now, all right, there's not a big difference. Shenatan mechachmato, shechilek mechachmato. You can make endless drushot either way. But now let me ask a different question. Right? If Moshe Feinstein walks into class, we make a bracha. Gadol be Yisrael. This is what a Jew is created for. All right? A Gentile walks in, a professor at Harvard University discovered something that's going to lead to a cure to cancer. We make a bracha. We're thrilled. A guy. But he's a human being. He's a toshav. Gev a toshav an achim machem. Conquering the world. Malu taretz v'kiv shura. Thank you. What you've discovered. Fabulous. Hey. Now Dr. Salk or Dr. Sabin walk into class. Recognize the names?
Yeah.
Polio vaccine. Thank God. Who has polio today? When I went to school, there were kids who were crippled, had polio. Their youth. Take a look, President Roosevelt. You never saw, they never photographed him, only here. You understand, there was an unwritten agreement with the press never to show him in a wheelchair, never to show that he couldn't stand, was incapacitated. Unbelievable. All right. Dr. Salk, Dr. Sabin, come in to hear this class. Do we make a bracha? They're Jews, right or wrong? Jews.
Not because they're Jews, but because what they accomplished.
They're Jews. No? What do they know of Shas Paiskim? What do they know of opening a siddur? All right, so they saved the world. Biology, chemistry, they know. But you don't make a bracha on a Jew for that. That's not the ultimate goal of a Jew. Fascinating question. This is the question he's going to deal with. But before I want to give you, I want to show you sources. Chaye Adam.
That's a source?
Yeah, I want to show you sources. 1 second. Chaye Adam. How they formulate the halacha. Klal Samach Gimel. Subdivision Chet. In the standard edition of the Chayyadam, page Kuf Samach Gimel. Chayyadam is very hard at times to follow because he does klalim and endless subdivisions. Klal Samach Gimel, Hilchat Brachat, Subdivision Chet, Kuf Samach Gimel. Chayyadam, you know who we're talking about? The Chayyadam of Avraham Danzig. The Rav used to stand in awe of him. You know what he was? A grocery store. A grocery store, I believe, in Vilna, if I'm not mistaken, or some other Lithuanian town. And He was a grocer. His wife ran it. He helped out. And he was a posek muvhak. The Soloveitchik family revered him. The Rav once spoke about the little grocery store owner, and he quoted, and he began a Yotzei Shin in the 50s, and he spoke afterwards on one little psak in the Chayodim for 2.5 hours. Haroa Chacham Gadol B'Torah B'Yisrael Mevareich Baruch Atan Shem Kamechlam Shachalach Meichach Matol Re'av. That's the Gisa that we have in the Gemara. All right? Haroa Chacham Gadol B'Chachmat Olam Mevareich Baruch Hashem Kamechlam Shachalach Meichach Mal Lebasa V'Dam. Okay? Now, very interesting question the Chayadim raises right away. First of all, you see there's a difference, Lebriyot Tov or Lebus of Adam. Does that make a difference? Does that affect the Gentile life? An interesting question. But he raises a different issue. Gentlemen, who are we today? What are we? Where Talmidei Chachamim? What do we know? The Rav? Moriu Rebbe? No one greater that I met in my life. Compare him to the Vilna Gaon. What's the comparison? Moriu Rebbe, one time someone came over to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and started praising the Rav. He had just heard a shiur from the Rav. And he says, Ayazun, your son is like your father, like Reb Chaim. And Reb Moshe gets very upset. Nein, hazei vait nish. Don't talk like that. Nitmatu hadarat. And this is reflected in all the halacha. For instance, if you insult a Talmud Chacham, you're fined. And already the Poskim will say that this doesn't apply today. None of us are these type of Talmidei Chachamim. We cannot claim that title. And the Chayadim says here, Afal gav de bezman hazeh ein landu din Talmud Chacham mikol makom li'inyun zeh af bezman hazeh. Misha hu muflag b'Torah mevarech alav bracha zu. What insight. We don't have a din of a Talmud Chacham. Who can be like the Vilna Gaon? Who can say we're on this level? Who can say I am a Talmud Chacham and deserve the entire status that a Talmud Chacham should have? But nevertheless, if someone is muflak b'Torah, he knows much more than others. This is our situation today. Take a look how they use the title Harav HaGaon, Harav HaGaon. Everyone is called Harav HaGaon. I can tell you, boy oh boy, I have heard Rabbi was at a Brit Miller, a Talmud of mine. It was his grandson's Brit. And I went to give this Talmud Chizik in Ramat Eshkol. And his daughter and son-in-law, all from YU families, moved 100 light years more to the right than YU. You have no idea what I'm talking about. If you wear a kippah shrugah and apikiris and isvaf abam, if you don't wear your tzitzit out, they don't want the grandparents around the kids, they should see Jews, don't put their tzitzit out, don't wear black hats, etc. You have this. So I went to the Brit to give him chizuk. And from his son-in-law's yeshiva, they're calling up Harav HaGaon, Harav HaGaon. All right, one of them is my own Talmud, Reb Chaim Milson. Taka's Harav HaGaon. And then they call up Harav HaGaon. He couldn't pronounce the bracha properly. He had the bracha that the Brit, you know, the two bracha that you make. Harav HaGaon. Oh my gosh. But you see, in this generation, yeah, everyone's a Rav HaGaon, everyone is Shlita, everyone is this, everyone is that. Every Chaver Knesset who's from Shas or from Degel HaTaira or from Agudas Yisrael, right away he gets the title HaRav. But it's a subjective matter. There are people who are heads and shoulders above the crowd. Rabbi Baron Lichtenstein, absolutely you have to make a bracha when you see him for the first time. Do you understand me, Herb? Heads and shoulders. He's not Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker wasn't the Vilna Gaon. Nitmatu Hadarad. You all know the Gemara and Shabbos.
These separations.
What?
You said Reb Chaim Brisker is not the Vilna Gaon. You said
the other fellow.
Who makes this?
Who makes this? Im lo b'neviim hen, b'nei neviim hen. The ruach of the lomdei Torah. We feel it. We know it. We sense it. We breathe it. But it's not an exact thing. Muflak. That's just what I want to stress. That he says, the Chayadim says, even though we're not on the level of real great Talmidei Chachamim, but the bracha is made someone who stands out in the crowd. All right? I understand it. Kitzei Shulchan Aruch. Take a look. Siman Samach, Bracha Tara'iyah, Subdivision Tet, Haroah Chacham Gadol B'Torah MiYisrael Bavarech Shecholak Mechachmato D'Rayav, Haroah Chacham Gadol B'Chachmat Ulam Yonat Olam Bavarech Shenatan Mechachmato L'Bas of Adam. And he has a very interesting comment. Aran number 40, and he says it, all the Achronim say it, gentlemen, you're in university now, you're studying biology, chemistry, mathematics, wait a minute, what about philosophy? What about church philosophy? What about church fathers? What about New Testament literature? And here you have a professor from Oxford, a non-Jew, who's the greatest expert in the world on church theology. Doesn't mean necessarily he believes it or practices it, but it's a science. Do you make a bracha on him? And the Kitzei Shulchan Aruch says, Hainu bahasheva chachmat lafukei imheim chachamim bedatam al ze einu mevarech klau. That when we're talking about making a bracha on a non-Jew, it's on the seven basic parts of the candelabra of general knowledge. Science, mathematics, I don't know, could be you can put music in. Music plays a big role in tradition, that it's a great amount of knowledge, music, what it represents, but not church theology. That we are warned about.
Okay.
Interesting or not?
Aquinas,
Augustine. It'd be very interesting. On such individuals, you cannot make a bracha. What about philosophy? What about the take a look at the Rav's, Moriah Rebbe's teachers in Berlin, who later become Nazis, adherents of the party, propagandists. Heidegger never apologized. It's unbelievable. And the Rav said, I remember the Rav practically crying, I was so close to him. I was his top student. He loved the Rav. He appreciated the Rav. And take a look. It's beyond comprehension. What the Germans, the heart of civilization. But let me go one step further. Orech HaShulchan, Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein. And Binyamin, there was one fellow in the Kollel, came to one class and told me he'd like to do a doctorate on the Orech HaShulchan. I tried to talk him out of it. I'd like to see someone do a doctorate on Rabbi Belkin. And I could, if I have someone, a good man who can handle it, I can push it. And I have a book now, I have a source, I told you, that solves a big, big problem for me in how to do certain parts of the doctorate. Tremendous solution. Did you talk with Professor Katzav? Yitzchak.
I didn't see him in show.
Okay, look for him. So, all right, if you know the name of the person, could it be Bernstein was the name came to me? And again, it's hard for me to remember names if it's a chad-pami relationship. But here's the Aruch HaShulchan. Very interesting. Very interesting. Aruch HaShulchan, Siman Reish Chaf Dalet, Hilchat Brachat, Subdivision Vav. Aruch HaCham, Mechachma Yisrael, Shegadol B'Torah, Mevareich shechalak mechachmato l'rayav. Roech hacham mechachmateichem hagadol b'sharei chachmat. Mevareich shenatan mechachmato l'basav adam. And here's the question that Herbie asked. V'kame sheyur gadlo b'torah o b'sharei chachmat lo nitpa'er lechem Nimnaimata mibracha zu. The Aruch HaShulchan says, how can you require bracha? How do you judge? What are the standards? Who can tell us? Look at the fighting that goes on in the secular world. Universities fighting each other, professors fighting each other. One says this guy is learned, one says he's not. Articles, battles, criticisms, critiques. Unfortunately, take a look in our world. The Frankel Rambam. What did they leave out? In back they have all the Mefarshim, they cite and give you sources of Achronim who dealt with the Rambam. What did they leave out? All the writings of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Rav Cook was a giant. Who's to say who was bigger, Rav Cook or Rabbi Zalman Meltzer? The giant. Look how the Chafetz Chaim related to Rav Cook. But you let politics get involved?
Look at them. Is there any edition of the Rambam that has Rav Cook?
No.
So why did you jump on him for?
No. Rav Cook, they took, if you're familiar with the Frankel Rambam, they take the writings where you dealt with the Rambam in your writings. Rav Cook deals with the Rambam 1,000 times over. In all his Shelet and Shuvah, he deals with the Rambam. Why didn't you include him? And you follow me? You're giving source notes, links. I'll use a modern word. You're giving links to Achronim. And they decided to leave Rav Cook out. Disgrace. Absolute disgrace. You let politics on that level enter a work of scholarship, a work of Torah? But that's the reality.
And Rav Cook was a great Zionist.
We understand what more than that, Rav Cook was very understanding of the Chiloniyim. You understand? Right. And they couldn't understand. They couldn't comprehend.
He says it a lot of times that it's Hashem's will that the Chilunim started the state.
Right, okay.
It's that, also Hashem's will that the Chilunim built the second base of Africa.
What you're referring to is this morning I had it out with Jomo. Whenever I ask Jomo to do something, so he'll say to me, God will take care of me. So I told Jomo 1,000 times over, Rav Yisrael Salanter would not agree with you. There's bitachon and there's shtatlut. So believe it or not, in this week's Olam Katan, one of the questions that Rav Shmuel Elio gets is this young girl, a young boy is saying, I have to make big decisions, what school to go to next year, and I really don't know what to do. But you know something? I've decided not to make any decision. Let God take care of it. Is that the proper approach? Oh, Rav Shmuel Elio wipes his face, smacks him, and says, you have to be Mishtadel. You hope God will approve and help you, but if you're not Mishtadel. So there's no question, Hishtadlot, what you say, God. But we humans have to make decisions. They simply didn't agree. But what you're saying is the Rav, look up Chamesh Drasha, let it show you this. If you don't know the Rav's Drasha and Yosef Yachav, you don't know how to breathe there. That's the most important Drasha the Rav ever got. So what you're saying is, 100 years later, thank God we had Rav Kook, okay? And now you see the Haredi world is starting to join us. It's unbelievable what's happening. Unfortunately, Daniel Rav Shmuel Orbach. So we're all caught up with that. The Haredim is suffering. We're suffering. But anyway, take a look what the Aruch HaShulchan says lahalacha. Since we can't judge, we don't make that bracha today. Well, if you're going to follow the Aruch HaShulchan lahalacha, you're going to have tremendous halachic problems because there's so much that's left to subjective standards. What are you going to do? You're going to not observe? You're going to rescind the bracha? You're going to negate the bracha? A very, very interesting question. And that's the Aruch HaShulchan. Everyone thinks the Aruch HaShulchan is so liberal and so modern and so up to date. And here you see a man whose brother-in-law is the Netziv, whose son is the Torah Tamima, and here he's saying we can't judge, we don't have the standards, it's too subjective, we don't make the bracha today. Okay, I'll go one step further on the sources. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, and I'm going to raise a very interesting question. But you see, the question that Reb Menashe Klein gets here is, for a Jew, a Talmud Chacham, fine, we know what bracha to make. It may be subjective. I told you, I once was subject to this, maybe more than once, but I remember in Mount Kisco, how the old gabbai of the old Orthodox shul in Mount Kisco, there's been an Orthodox shul there for well over 100 years. Now there's a large Hasidic community in Mount Kisco as well. But the old community and an old gabbai, I believe he was a World War II survivor of the Holocaust. So I was scholar in residence there. My student was rabbi there. You all know my student, Rabbi Aaron Goldscheider. He teaches in the Kollel. You're all familiar with him. So this man made a bracha, Chalak Mechachmato, on a guy named Rakefet. All right, what can I tell you? In this day and age, in Mount Kisco, perhaps I was heads and shoulders above the crowd. But okay, this is the reality. A guy who discovers a great scientific cure that has implications for the cure of illness, I jumped to make a bracha. Thank God, look what this man accomplished. Shenatan mechachmato lebasav adam o lebriotav. I'd explain it to him and go over and analyze it. But tell me, what if Albert Einstein walks into this room? Do we make a bracha? A Jew doesn't know Shas, doesn't know Poskim, doesn't know how to daven. Sabin,
the theory.
The letter.
The two-word letter he gave to a bellboy in Japan.
Right.
And it went for $1.5 million.
Wait, I thought it was the theory of relativity.
No. What happened was he didn't have money to give a guy a tip.
A tip.
Okay, he wrote him a little note. And he said, this note will be worth money savings. So he got sold at that auction somewhere in Tel Aviv.
$1.5 million.
And just for a scribble, his signature. Right.
What are you talking about? Jackie Robinson's baseball cap was sold for $549,000.
And
22 words. All right, I gotta look into my files and see if I have any letters from Einstein. It's shayach that I have. All I can tell you is Joe DiMaggio never paid for anything. He wrote checks, and no one would cash the check because let's say he wrote you a check for $49. You had to be crazy to cash it. A check signed by Joe. You know Joe DiMaggio. Is that much, Benjamin? Or you know, oh my gosh. You're making Yitz Rubin look good. But I have to tell the audience listening across the world, Mr. Benjamin Feinmesser is from London, right? So we can't hold him guilty. The greatest baseball player. I'll tell you even better. DiMaggio, now that I read this new book by Pasatino, by his doctor, Joe DiMaggio, he would eat in restaurants, right? Never was billed. Why? If he would eat in the restaurant and he'd give them permission to publicize that he was going to eat in that restaurant, you have no idea how much more business is brought into the restaurant. So they knew what they were doing. Gentlemen, let me reiterate, it's a pleasure to teach, a pleasure to share knowledge. The Ribbono Shel Olam should give strength. We're just beginning. You'll see. You'll see why I told Yitzchak, don't get too excited. I don't want to have heart failure when you see what Reb Menashe Klein says at the end. But we finished out the holdup. The holdup is... would he say? Yeah, he would say bracha for the rabbi. Yeah, I'll tell you who Reb Menashe Klein is. They just did a write-up on artists. I saw, I think, in one of the religious Makor Rishon, perhaps I saw it, perhaps elsewhere. And they're dealing with this artist, a Baal Tshuva, a Shtigl of Breslova. You know, plays the role, and terrific artist. And or maybe I saw it in an old issue about Mishpacha. And one of his art pieces is a whole group of Chassidish-looking Jews, all black, all with the uniform. And if you look closely, one has orange socks instead of black socks. And he says, I want to give a message that even though we look alike, but we have to be individuals. And that's Reb Menashe Klein. That was the Rav. And that's the way I was raised. That's the way I was taught to be. And I'll come back to it when I speak of Hakarat HaTov. So we finished out the holdup. La'alacha, you have to make a bracha, no question. That guy was arguing with him that he interpreted, and the average holdup doesn't want to kill you. Give him $100 and he'll be happy. All right, there's some truth to it. But then you get involved in the whole question. Do you have to feel danger, or just was it dangerous scene, etc.? Well, you know, it can be analyzed ad infinitum.
I think, for example, traveling over the ocean with the airplane, I think we've kind of done the Levy Pastor that today we don't have to make a call.
Yeah, no, that was the rub. Logically speaking, as I said, it's a lot less dangerous than traveling by car, and some people would say crossing a street in some of the cities in Israel.
Yeah, when an airplane is going through a real turbulence.
Right. The Rav said that if you felt danger, then you have to make a bracha. And he gave that example of turbulence in the airplane, as I recall. But then we began a second topic that we're just scratching the surface. The bracha you make on seeing a gadol b'Torah was someone very wise with a lot of wisdom and secular knowledge. Not church knowledge, obviously. Not where you get involved with Avodah Zarah. An interesting question. What about someone who's a great expert in the Chinese literature or Greek and Latin literature or Greek mythology? I would be very hesitant to make a bracha of someone who's a great expert in Greek mythology. But it's what's fascinating here is the Aruch HaShulchan says we don't make the bracha, we can't judge, it's too subjective. All right, if we were to go with the Aruch HaShulchan, then we really would have a problem with many, many things in addition to this type of bracha. All right, now tomorrow morning, B'ezrat HaNoteinu Yav Koach, I pick up exactly where I left off last week. It's very fascinating how the Agudas Rabbanim being organized, what they're dreaming about, what they're trying to do, and you'll see what they couldn't complete. The organizational meeting breaks off before they can go further. Very, very fascinating. And then we'll see what develops World War I, and it's a fascinating topic. A great deal of material that we have to cover yet. Now, this is an interview with Rav Adin Steinsaltz. It is a masterful interview. It seems Rav Shlomo Amar just attacked Rav Steinsaltz for interpreting the Gemara. What else is new? When Chazal, when the Targum Shevim came out, Chazal declared it tainit, but nevertheless they let it come out. So the attack of Steinsaltz here is a beautiful article about him. And believe me, the best description of Rav Steinsaltz is that he wears purple socks or orange or whatever color you want to give him. A blue shirt for sure. Here's the story of the Sakhmuruv's grandson, great-grandson. Also,
fast. John the Right, is that him when he was
a... That's him when he was a kid in Sakhma, and that's him today. This is an interesting question that I've often thought about. I don't know, I myself always make a motzi. What the halachic analysis of wraps, and as a whole machleiki, wraps. What they wrap around here, you see.
Make a motzi.
Yeah, but here you see people say you make a mizonah.
Why? It's not bread.
And why isn't it bread?
It's not in the shape of bread.
They put juice in it.
I don't know.
The way it's made, I think.
I don't know. It's not
the same consistency.
Not the same consistency. So it's a whole machleikus here. I can't believe it.
It is pita. Isn't it pita?
Savasay Mizona. Anyway, if you want, here are all the sources. You can take it and follow with it. I also want to apologize. Last week, Larry Zeifman from Toronto came to class on Sunday in the afternoon, and I wasn't here, and my apologies.
In the afternoon?
Yeah, he didn't know that it was changed to the morning.
Oh.
So I apologize. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. If anyone wants...